Fixing hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Part two.
I'm Greg Wyshynski, formerly of ESPN, as all of your angry tweets have forced my company to drop me. Yes, it's true. They did. They all of you that added ESPN, you've done it. I'm now working at an Arby's off
you
the New
wish.
Jersey Turnpike. and that is the sad truth.
I'm Ryan Lambert from EP Ringside. We're not going to keep that bit going.
Sean McAnoo, The Athletic.
There he is.
You're in puck soup. I want to start talking about the Buffalo Sabres, obviously the biggest news of the day. There's a story in the Buffalo News today that says that the Sabres, the headline is, Sabres exec, how can we connect with fans on something deeper than wins and losses? His quote at the end of the story is, how can we connect with fans on something that's deeper than wins and losses? How can we really have that one-on-one connection that we were able to start in some ways this year with those limited number of fans? This is the greatest thing I've ever read from a losing team. I'm sorry. It really is. It's like, how can we market this horrible team that is always in the basement and completely falls apart every season in a way where we don't have to talk about the record?
It's fantastic. It's one of those like apartment listings in New York where it's like, yeah, sure, the oven's in the bathroom and you can't open the refrigerator without pivoting it 90 degrees on the wall. But the neighborhood's really walkable. So
yeah. This is a quote. This is about, like, you know, they've been able to – they feel connect with fans in a way during the pandemic.
Sending them
one of the nice things
checks, for example.
Oh, yeah.
Remember
there's
they did that?
There.
Yeah.
One of the nice things with the low numbers is we were able to leave on all the seats a nice little gift bag with a handwritten note from our box office staff who works with a lot of season ticket holders to give that nice personal touch. There you go. So the way to get around being a horribly managed franchise, I think, is you get yourself to Party City, grab yourself some gift bags, throw maybe some double bubble in there, maybe a whistle, maybe one of them candy necklaces, and write a little note that says, hey, we appreciate you, Sabres fan. Good stuff. Sean, you wanted to talk about Michael Hauser as well, as long as we're talking about Buffalo, yeah?
Yeah. I love this story. This is
the cool
goaltender who I don't even know where he would have started on the depth chart at the beginning of the year.
He wouldn't have been on it,
but,
I think it's fair to say.
Fourth, fifth, sixth, maybe. And the Sabres, between mostly injuries and a couple of smaller trades, have just run out of guys. And so this guy, I mean, he's I'm not saying he's not a good goaltender, but he was sixth or seventh on the depth chart for the worst team in the league. And he gets called up at the end of the season, the 2 weeks left, season's a total write-off. And he more or less just gets thrown to the wolves because he's the next guy up and he's got his own pads. And so he's got to be the guy who goes. And he wins two games. He wins his first two games. I love it. He plays well, beats, you know, the good Islanders team. Maybe.
See, that's a different thing we can talk about.
I love the story. It's just, you know, it's there have not been a lot of feel-good stories in the NHL this year. And this one is one. I just really like this. And
I wonder if the Sabres have stumbled onto a market inefficiency where it's like, let's just get every goalie in the ECHL, be like, this is your big game. We're going to play huge for you. You know, get ready. Here we go. And you just cycle through like 60 different guys. All of a sudden, you're in the playoff hunt, baby.
So goaltending by massive 60-person committee?
Yeah.
I love it.
It's worked twice so far, and no reason to believe it would stop now. But yeah, the thing about the Islanders, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, they suck shit lately. Have you seen this? Yeah.
Not
Four regulation wins in the last month. Three of them against the Nye Rangers, a team that everybody agrees is bad. So,
quick check of the old Kyle Palmieri watch. One goal in 14 games. So maybe I was wrong on that being a real good pickup.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, we heard from Rachel a couple of weeks ago that maybe Taylor Hall didn't want to go there. Was that what it was? Oh, no. It was the team said, like, we can do better. That was what it was.
I also think he just wanted to go to Boston, though. I don't think they would have gotten Taylor Hall necessarily.
I do feel like I read that somewhere, but I've seen conflicting stuff about that. But anyway, yeah, the Islanders are in a lot of trouble right now. One of the many teams in the league who are really struggling down the stretch. Like, please, we don't want to make the playoffs, actually.
Sounds like the last days of Nassau Coliseum will be short if they play that poorly in the playoffs. Keep in mind, this is it. This playoff run is it. They will close the Coliseum in the postseason. Well, I mean, they won't close it. It'll still exist, but they'll no longer play.
No, they're going to blow it up. They already said.
Oh, man.
That'd Matt Barzal's going to push down the plunger on the whole detonation. Did they bench him last night? Did I see that?
Matt Barzal?
Yeah. Did he get, like, benched or something? Scratched?
I think he was like a maintenance type of scratch.
Oh, okay. Okay.
16:09, and he was a -2, so who's to say? Sean, on the Buffalo goalie front, I mean, you are, of course, a veteran of the David Ayers affair as well. When you see this thing happen, doesn't it make you think we put too much of a premium on goalies in this league?
Oh, sure.
If anyone can do it?
Yeah. I mean, that's part of what makes it a good story, is that it's not that anyone can do it. And we know that if this guy played a full season, he's probably not going to be a 940 goalie. But on any given night, yeah, it's a very strange position. And this is part of what makes goaltending such a tough spot to figure out, because there's not a lot of positions in sports where, you know, you could throw a guy. You can't put your fifth string quarterback in there, and in the NFL, you might win the game, but he's not going to throw for 400 yards unless it's a Kurt Warner situation. So that's part of what makes it cool. It shouldn't happen, mm-hmm. but it does. I don't think this is going to last, but this guy's going to walk away with a very cool story. You hear even the stories coming out now, but like the guy's phone blowing up when, like, as his teammate, people who played with him at 10 years ago when he was a prospect, blowing up his phone because they hear that he's actually made it and he's going to get to play. It's just neat. It's just one of those things. And it would be a cool story even if he was losing, even if he was getting shelled. But the fact that he's playing playing well is just... we need all the good Sabres news we can get. So
no kidding.
Yes. Living the dream.
Yep. I just looked it up. Career AHL number, 73 games, 901. ECHL, 210 games, 915. NHL, 2 games, 940. So
sure.
There you go. It's going
obviously,
great.
NHL shooters are just worse than all those other leagues. Or maybe absolutely. The Islanders are.
He's the next Tim Thomas. I'm calling it now.
Yep.
Absolutely.
That'd be awesome.
All right. You belabored the point enough.
Yeah, did you see how little I want to fucking talk about this?
I completely understand that.
Did you see the third pair on the Senators this week? Crazy. Let's talk about it.
We have to talk about it. I'm exhausted by it in the last 24 hours, but
seems like
let's start with the fun shit. Fault
there.
Well, sure. We'll start with the fun shit, though. The New York Rangers call for the head of George Parros in a strongly worded statement about Tom Wilson's antics on Monday. Said that Wilson was not suspended for his horrifying act of violence at Madison Square Garden. And he's dangerous and reckless, injured Artemi Panarin, who will prevent him from playing again this season. The Rangers are very, very good at getting the out for the rest of the season information to the proper sources on Tuesday morning. the rest of the season being three games. We view this as a dereliction of duty by NHL head of player safety George Parros, and believe he is unfit to continue in his current role. We should say that we're recording the show, obviously, on Wednesday, so we don't know what kind of circus act happened in the Rangers-Capitals game tonight as we do the show. Hopefully, it ain't too bad. Ryan, what was your reaction to the Rangers' missive towards the National Hockey League player safety chief?
What, do you think it's going to change? They get some other fucking guy in there, and he's going to start throwing big-time suspensions around like Brendan Shanahan did? Brendan Shanahan tried it. All the GMs and owners were like, this is too much. And then all subsequent people in charge of the player safety department have been like, yeah, I guess throwing your stick at a guy, that's a $3,800 fine. So, whatever. Like, that's literally what it is. It's like, this is the system. Like, you're not going to get a better guy to operate within the system because the system's the problem. So, yeah, fire Paris. I don't give a shit. Who cares?
I think that's about right. And I would agree with, like, you know, I think player safety does a good job, but I also think that under Paris, okay, and maybe under Quintal, in both cases, the suspensions have been light, man. Like, there are certain ones that you figure are going to be, like, four games coming at, like, two. And I don't know if that's the edict from the GMs or just the precedents that have been set. I don't know what it is, but I've always felt the suspensions are, like, one or two games off of what they should be, maybe. Sean, what did you think of the Rangers?
Yeah, I mean, we've said it a million times on various player safety decisions, about half of which have been about Tom Wilson. These guys are doing the job that they have been put in place to do. It's if the league wanted this to be handled differently and wanted bigger suspensions, what have you, then they would get that. That's the Department of Player Safety is not some independent organization that gets to do this stuff completely in isolation. They answer to the league, and this is what the league wants. Now, when you see the reaction from the Rangers, could this be the start of the league wanting something different? Maybe. It's got to start somewhere. And if it has to start somewhere, having it be one of your biggest markets is not a bad place to start. I mean, this is, right or wrong, the fact that this is the Rangers saying this matters more than if it was the Coyotes or the Jets or somebody like that. You know, this is your New York market standing up and saying this isn't good enough and we need significant change, if not fundamental change, in how we approach this stuff. So that's potentially a positive first step, but it is just a first step. And I think we're all looking at this going, yeah, but what's going to happen the first time it's a Ranger player? You know, are we right back to, oh, well, now we got to give everyone the benefit of the doubt? And it's very easy to stand up and say we need to change when it's your team that's on the other end of the controversial play. It's got to now also come from other teams, and it's got to come even from the teams. I'm not expecting the Capitals to step forward and throw their own guy under the bus, but it can't just be whichever team is on the receiving end of that week's controversial play says something, vents, gets it out of their system, and then it's forgotten about. Because if that's what happens, then it's nothing will change, and nothing will change because nobody will really actually want it to change.
I think the Capitals' response was actually a photo of Tom Wilson and then a pair of emoji sunglasses descending onto his face, and then it says "deal with it" across the screen. It's pretty cool. Because they're all into the memes, you see, the Capitals.
Yeah.
Would you say anybody was triggered by that, Greg? Is that something
I was thinking?
They're
definitely triggered by it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's talk about it. I was completely right.
No, you weren't. No, listen. I'm not. I don't want any part of this fucking discussion because it's just going to be like Thanksgiving with the fucking red-pilled uncle who's like, you know, actually, the Clinton crime family.
That's right.
Just shut the
I'm
fuck
ben
up.
I'm Ben Shapiro.
Yeah.
I'm
no,
red-pilled.
You definitely, it's Greg. You definitely are. And so I'm just going to let you say whatever you say, and I'm going to go, okay, Pop, we're gonna change the
so
conversation.
So what's red-pilled about saying that, comparing this to Todd Bertuzzi, or saying that this should get Tom Wilson kicked out of the league is an overreaction? The fuck's red-pilled about that?
I'm not going to find it. Like,
because you don't have a fucking answer because you know I'm right.
No, it's because look, you're a guy, you're like, oh, my favorite player of all time, Claude Lemieux. Like, yeah. We know where you're coming from with this, and that's fine. Like, Greg, I love you. I think you're way smarter than this, but I think you've also talked yourself into this, like, rhetorical corner that you can't pivot out of.
What is the rhetorical corner? The rhetorical corner
that
is
Tom Wilson can do no fucking wrong.
That is not even fucking true. Okay. I said he should be kicked out of the game. I literally wrote yesterday that the next time he does something that warrants a suspension, they should give him fucking 60 games. The paradigm that you've created and other people have created where if you say you can't look at this thing that he did and elevate it to something that it's not is defending Tom Wilson is fucking horseshit. It's just horseshit. But equally horseshit is looking at an act and saying it's 1,000 times worse than it actually is because of who did it.
Well,
because
look,
again,
okay.
Like, as much as people hit me with the, if it was Jack Hughes who got flipped, you'd be so fucking mad. If that was Brendan Smith who did that shit instead of Tom Wilson, we wouldn't even be fucking talking about it.
Yeah, we would, because he'd have gotten suspended for it. But again,
he would have not gotten suspended. You think the NHL is protecting Tom Wilson? Is that where you're coming from?
Yes.
Oh, come the fuck on. They gave him 20 games.
Yeah, and then all the subsequent.
They invented a suspension for him to give him 7 for Carlo. Trust me when I tell you the NHL would like to suspend Tom Wilson. They're just not going to do it for something that doesn't warrant it. And that was my whole point. I mean, look, hit me with the fucking red pill Ben Shapiro GOP shit.
Well, you're the one using that language. Nobody's forcing you.
Oh, because I said triggered?
Yeah.
And what happened? You had fucking people, peers and fans.
Would you say snowflakes, Greg? Would you say they're snowflakes?
If you want to use that word. I don't give a shit. Oh, what? Because I used fucking GOP language and now you're pissed about it? I mean, come on, man. The point stands and the point is correct that if you look at that play and all of a sudden you're like, this is as bad as Todd Bertuzzi. Like,
yeah, nobody who's serious said that shit, though. Like, no,
everybody said it.
Everybody, like, yeah.
It wasn't everybody, but I did see that said by people who I consider reasonable.
It was not an insignificant number of people that reacted that way, Ryan.
I didn't see
come on.
That.
Okay.
I'm not
did
saying
you see
it
people
didn't
saying,
happen. I'm
did you see people saying
I didn't
that this,
see it, let alone
okay, that's
everybody.
Fine. But did you see people saying that Tom Wilson should never play another game in the NHL?
I guess I did see that, and like that.
Okay, yes.
That's obviously over the top. But like, and even like Larry.
That's my fucking point.
Well, no,
that was the only thing I'm trying
though.
To say.
No,
but that's the only thing I'm trying to say.
But even like Larry Brooks saying like, oh, somebody could have died. Like, okay, I know somebody could have, but like somebody could have died on the fucking the Shane Goff
exactly.
Bear cross check last
okay.
night, and like
so.
But like at the same time, right? Like the idea that this like. Keeps accidentally happening to Tom Wilson. Like, oh, crazy. What a weird
Completely
coincidence.
Agree. Completely agree. And we can talk about that in a second. But did you understand that, like, you just said everything that I was trying to say when I said there was
Yeah, but I didn't say anybody who's mad about this shit and, like, sick of Tom Wilson pulling this shit is fucking a triggered snowflake who is living and you're living or you're giving him space rent-free in your head.
Well, I never wrote that. That was the Capitals.
I know,
but
like, it's the same fucking
triggered the right
thought process.
People lose their fucking minds when Tom Wilson.
Yeah, because he keeps fucking doing it, Greg. Oh, well, people lost their mind when Trump kept lying. Yeah, they're triggered. Yeah, well,
you
because
keep bringing it back to Trump. Where does this come from? Like, are you arguing
because
that
you use the same
if
fucking
Tom Wilson
language.
Does something, then all of so you don't use triggered is the issue. It's not overreacting to it. It's the triggered thing. Okay, I will expunge triggered from my vocabulary. Can we be cool then?
And then again, like you now you're like the king of the king of the like oh boy I'm just so sick of these people not giving Tom fucking Wilson a fair shake and like who's enabling Tom Wilson and all this shit. It's like
oh yeah,
fucking everybody, including I don't know certain members of the media who are like. Everybody in the fucking league would want him on their team and blah, blah. Like, okay, great.
Well, I mean, that's like Matt Barnaby saying that and shit. Like, that's, you know. But, I mean, to your point, I do think that media are culpable in this. I probably should have put that in the piece. But the piece is about some of the things that we haven't talked about, which is that, you know, if you want Tom Wilson banned for life or suspended for a season – the NHL can't just wave its hand and say he's gone. There's a players union. And I read that Larry Brooks piece in which he called Tom Wilson an attempted murderer or some such. And And he doesn't mention the PA in there. A lot of pieces that were talked about, Tom Wilson didn't mention the PA in there. And I always find that to be fascinating because, like, you know, the NHL suspended him for 20 games. He got 14 because there was an appeal because the NHL, because the NHLPA collectively bargains in the CBA to have the chance to appeal suspensions because they don't want Gary Bettman to be the arbiter of how long someone sits. And, you know, people look at the $5,000 fine. They say, that's a fucking joke. Yeah, no shit. You know what the NHL wants to do? Hit these guys with more money. You know what the NHLPA does? Says you can't. So, like, it's amazing to me that this all falls on, like, a George Parros or the fucking player safety or whatever. And no one takes a step back to say, A, what the PA's responsibility is, and B, what the fucking Capitol's responsibility in this is. Like, there's not a single person in that organization that is going to go to Tom Wilson and say, don't play like this. They're paying him to play like this. They're paying him to do what he did on Monday. So, you're right. What I wished for on Monday, besides people not looking at a play that didn't deserve a suspension and saying it should be 50 games,
it didn't.
But what'd you have get? What would you have given him? A game to just take him out of the
fucking end of the regular season plus one in the playoffs. He learns his lesson because remember the last time. I don't want to hurt anybody out there. Okay, Tom. Yeah, we can fucking tell.
And this would be a suspension specific to Tom Wilson then? So if Chris Kreider does the same thing next season, does he get 5 games?
Well, does Chris Kreider have the fucking lengthy suspension history Tom Wilson? No, I'm not. I'm done talking about this shit. Fuck, like, these fucking gotchas of, like, nobody. Tom Wilson is a unique fucking person in the league in terms of how he plays the game. And how many times he gets called in front of the Department of Player Safety, and they're like, well, look, we wish we could suspend you, but phew, what were we supposed to do? Okay, sure.
Right, because
they don't fucking want to suspend him. That's why. They want to suspend him so bad.
I don't understand.
They had the power to do it.
He got suspended 5 times, once for 20 games. Like, where is the evidence that the NHL Department of Player Safety is protecting Tom Wilson? Because they didn't suspend him for something that happens once a week in the league?
A week, yep, for sure.
It happened Tuesday night, Ryan.
Yeah, the Crosby play was not the same.
No,
I know. You knew as soon as
first
the Tom
of all,
Wilson
Crosby
happened,
didn't do it fucking twice.
Yeah, as soon as Tom Wilson happened, you knew everyone was going to be looking for the next scrum so they could point to it and say that's the same thing. It wasn't the same thing. Look, I'll jump in here because. As much as you two seem to be enjoying your conversation with each other.
It fucking sucks. I hate this shit.
It's been delightful. No, I hate it too.
Yeah, you can tell.
Look.
Oh, do you think I relish the fact that people are talking about my fucking family online because they're mad about a hockey play? Yeah, it's great. I fucking dig it. I wish it could be every day. Do you think I like the idea of, like, people going to my – I joked about it at the top of the show – going to my employer and say, fire this motherfucker because of an opinion he had? That's great. Do you think I like yelling at you? Oh, it's the peaches.
That part's fun.
Yeah.
Well, it's not fun. It's not fun when you start – when your approach to the conversation is to fucking compare me to, like, Ben Shapiro when you know that hurts.
Well, again, I mean –
anyway, Sean, go ahead.
You said the thing that was – it was the title of Donald Trump Jr.'s book, remember? Do you remember this? Anyway.
I didn't read it.
Yeah, I saw the cover.
Sorry, Sean. Go ahead.
So, I mean, I'll start here. I'm with Greg in the sense that I did not think this play rose to the level that some seem to. I would disagree. I don't think it was common. I don't think it was everyone was saying that this is Todd Bertuzzi all over again, or that this is, you know, kick him out of the league. But there was some of that, and this isn't. On Tom Wilson's worst moments, this play wasn't top five. It probably isn't top 10 in his career, which is not a defense. It's a statement on who this guy is and how he plays. But I did think it was a little bit of a uniquely weird play in that I have you guys, it's our job when this stuff flares up every few weeks, you watch the play, you sit down, you got to come up with your take. I can't really remember seeing a situation like this where it felt like there was as big a difference between watching it in real time and then watching it in the slow-mo replays. Like, you watch the slow-motion replay, and it looks like he's really trying to hurt guys. And then you watch it in real time, and you're like, I've seen that scrum 3 times a night. And it's this weird, and I don't know, because on the one hand, you watch something, you slow something down, you're going to get details and that you might not otherwise pick up on. On the other hand, the game gets played in real time, and I don't know how much you slow it down and expect, well, okay, in this frame, this, but then the next frame, this happens, and I don't know. I went back and forth with it on Monday. That's partly why I didn't jump into the middle of the conversation, because there were a few times where I'm like, I'm really not sure what I think on this, because I look at one angle and it seems like no big deal, and I look at another angle and it seems like it is. Having thought it over for a couple of days, where I come down is I do think it was a suspension worthy, and I think it's suspension worthy partly because it is Tom Wilson. This guy has a track record. I don't think we need to twist ourselves into knots trying to give the benefit of the doubt to somebody who not only hasn't earned it, but has burned through whatever benefit of the doubt he should have ever had with how he's been for years and years now. I don't feel any need to start my view of this from any place other than, yeah, it is Tom Wilson, and he should be judged differently, especially when you're trying to figure out intent and you're trying to figure out, well, you know, we're not quite sure. Did he mean to do this? Did he mean to do that? Tom Wilson has spent his career trying to hurt guys. So I don't mind starting from the standpoint that he might be trying to hurt somebody, where other players, I might say, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. I would have given him a small suspension, 3 or 4, maybe 5 games. I am confused and very curious about what is going on in the Department of Player Safety that they didn't do that. And this is where I sort of side with Ryan, where he says something that maybe on the surface sounds ridiculous, which is that the Department of Player Safety doesn't seem to want to suspend this guy. They've suspended a bunch of times. But you look at what's happened since they hit him with the big 20-game suspension. And when they hit him with that suspension,
that's right,
it wasn't just a big, big number, but the way that they talked about him, okay? They basically said, in fact, I've got the quote right in front of me, that he had been, it was an unprecedented frequency of suspensions in the history of the Department of Player Safety, is how they described Tom Wilson's track record. When they dropped that suspension on him. And like a lot of people at the time, when I heard that, I said, okay, this guy is officially in the Rafi Torres, Matt Cook zone. And this was them telling him, you are out of chances and we're going to be watching you like a hawk. And every time you slip up, you're going to get hammered from now on. And then he served his suspension, got it reduced. He came back. It was like 9 games in and he got kicked out of a game for blindsiding somebody with a high hit. And the Department of Player Safety chose not to suspend him. And in fact, they rescinded the penalty that he got in that game. And maybe that was the right call, but it was sort of like, oh, okay. And then it's been 2 years since you had the 7-game suspension, but you know, there's a lot of people who will tell you that they're not convinced that came from the Department of Player Safety. And that they think that maybe Gary Bettman or whoever else outside of that group put a thumb on the scale to make sure that there was a suspension there, where maybe George Parris or whoever else didn't feel like there should have been one. And then this thing comes along, and even the fact, put aside whether they suspend him or not, the fact that when they do the release to talk about this $5,000 fine that they hit him with, they could have very easily just said, Tom Wilson was fined $5,000 for his actions in that scrum, or his actions in that moment, that time of the game, and just leave it at that. But they actually specifically said that it was for the Buchnevich punch. They punch, specified what it was, which basically is their way of saying everything with Artemi Panarin was fine. They pretty much excluded that from, and it just, you're just kind of sitting there going, like, at some point it starts to feel like this has become a thing in the Department of Player Safety, where they've bent over so far backwards to be fair to this guy that they've sort of come around to the other side, and now it's going to take something bigger or more ridiculous to get back to this level of holding him accountable. Like, I don't know, Mike, I've got a teenager. I know what the "you can't tell me what to do" vibe feels like. And I'm starting to get that from the Department of Player Safety when it comes to this guy, where they're just like, you know what? We know everybody hates him. We know everyone wants us to drop the hammer. Screw you. We're not doing it until he leaves us with absolutely no choice. And because Monday didn't rise to that level, he gets off again. And you know what? That no choice play is going to come at some point. It's right. And I don't know if it's this week. It could be tonight. Who knows? But it's going to happen at some point, and we're going to look at it and say it could have been avoided. They could have hit him with a couple of games. It wouldn't have affected the Capitals at all. Capitals have nothing to play for. It's seeding. They're in the playoffs. You could have done it. You could have sent a message. You know, I know it would have felt like PR, but PR is part of the job for these guys. And instead, and also, by the way, you give him a suspension, you get him out of tonight's game, which lowers the temperature on what could end up being a gong show tonight. And yet they refuse to do it. And I think probably a lot of guys in that department feel like they are just being as fair as they can be, and they're going to take the arrows and take the criticism because it's their job to be fair, and that's what they think they're doing. But it just feels like they pushed it so far and tipped the scale so much that now because it's Tom Wilson, it has to be this big over-the-top thing to get looked at in the same way that it should get looked at based on a guy just who has this kind of track record.
Yeah. It's very, very good stuff. The first thing I wanted to mention, though, about that quote about the Wilson suspension, which, of course, was in reference to him being suspended four times in the span of a year, which really was unprecedented and ended with a 20-game suspension. Three of those were for illegal checks to the head. And one of the things that they do, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, and maybe it's a bad thing based on like the reaction of Tom Wilson, is they judge each play on its own merits within the context of the player's history. So if you – the illegal check to the head on Sundqvist – was his third such infraction in the span of a year. And that's what resulted in the 20 games. If the next thing he does is spear somebody, it's not going to be 25, right? Because it's not related to the infraction that gave him that massive suspension. And I think that's maybe one of the reasons why people struggle with, like, why wasn't he hit with a massive suspension for Monday or whatever, is
yeah,
because
it's a fucking
they don't
absurd.
View Yeah, they don't do the,
totally
the totality of
standard.
The behavior. Yeah, and it might be. I completely agree. I mean, that's the rationale in that. Now, on the quote about the unprecedented nature, I also know that quote because I remember it from the arbitrator's decision. And again, you have to look at all of the different impacts on the NHL suspension apparatus. They can't just give somebody a suspension for 50 games.
Right. No,
because
okay.
It'll just be knocked down.
Right. We know. But that is also what feeds into they don't want to suspend the guy because they're like, well, look, if we suspend him now, we're going to have to suspend him for fucking 15 games because he keeps doing this shit and we don't want to get an arbitrator involved. So we're just not going to suspend him. You don't think that's process?
It could be, but that's not the NHL's fault. Like,
sure
that's
it is.
The PA's fault. Well, no, it's not. I mean, if you're somebody who wants him to pay the price for his actions, he can't pay the price when someone can easily just reduce the price.
Right, but like let's say you give him 40 games, right? And the arbitrator busts it down to 10 games, whatever. Like, make up whatever numbers you want there. That's more than zero that they keep giving him and going like, oh, I bet that $5,000 he's really gonna fucking miss that. Like, it's ridiculous.
No, the $5,000 almost was worse than if they had just said, look,
yes,
this
I
was,
totally
but again,
agree.
The penalties on the ice were appropriate, and beyond that, no further discipline is needed. The
where
fact
does
that
the $5,000 come
it's,
from?
It's like, it's like when, yeah, it's like when Pavel Bure elbowed Shane Cherlin and Brian Burke gave him a $500 fine. Like, that was worse than doing
right.
nothing because it said,
but
no, this actually was worthy of punishment, and the punishment is reach into your couch cushions and pull out whatever.
It's not worthy of a suspension, but it's worthy of punishment. And now why is it $5,000?
Because that's the max, of course.
Because the CBA and the NHL should negotiate something higher with the players. It's not up to the players to just give this to the league. because the league has made it very clear that nothing in negotiations is ever given. It all has to be a fight. So the players are absolutely right to say, no, if you want it to be 10,000 or 50 or 100,000, give us something in return. And the league has not seen fit to give something in return to make it worth it. So it's not the player's fault. I do put that on the league. They could make this happen if it was a priority for them. It never has been. I think they kind of like the fact that they get to hide behind it and go, well, CBA, it's the players, right? Yep.
I don't think the NHL is happy about only being able to fine someone $5,000 at all. But the counterpoint is, if we are constantly talking about, you know, why Tom Wilson is able to be Tom Wilson and talk about the players that he harms who are also members of the National Hockey League Players Association, like, is it that much of an ask to say raise the cap on fines? I mean, like, isn't it kind of contingent on them to participate in the disciplinary process?
Yeah, they should participate. No, I mean, look, we just had a new CBA. I didn't hear one thing about this issue. And if the league was pushing for it and the players were saying absolutely not, then we would have heard about it. So, look, under normal circumstances, I agree with what you're saying, Greg. Like, this is, you know, it's player safety and the player should be. The NHL under Gary Bettman has made it crystal clear that they don't do a thing for anyone unless it's a give-and-take negotiation. So I've got zero problem with the players throwing that exact card right back at them when it comes to this stuff.
Okay. But then we can't complain about $5,000 fines then. I mean, that's the PA doing that.
No, we absolutely can. It's a CBA. You could change it now. Gary Bettman can call up the PA right now and say, I really want this to go up. What's it going to take? What do I have to give you to make this happen? And then you negotiate it. That could happen today, but that phone call isn't going to happen. So, because it's not a priority for the league or the players, either one of them.
Where the NHL is really fucked up, I think, is in its lack of attention to penalize teams, which is something that they could do tomorrow without any PA involvement. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wrote about this in the column about how when the Matt Cook shit was happening with Pittsburgh, and they try to, you know, deprogram him by sitting him down with Bylsma and Shiro and Mario. Mario wrote a letter to Bettman and said, look, you know, as part of this whole thing in trying to eradicate repeat offenders, the teams should have to pay a penalty for it. You know, if you have a player that is suspended or runs afoul of the Department of Player Safety like twice in a season, the team should be fined $1 million. I think that's a great idea. Do you remember the whole like Jesse Bolarice thing? Remember that back in the day when he was like running rampant and going fucking nuts on people? I remember there being a thing about like, why aren't the coaches culpable for this? Why aren't the GMs culpable for this? Why aren't the teams culpable for this? And when you think about the way that the Capitals have enabled this behavior to the point where, like, you know, their social media team is blasting out memes to celebrate Tom Wilson on a night when he injured a player. Well, yeah, fuck yeah. Of course they should be penalized for it. And that's where I think the NHL has really like dropped the ball. Because they could do that tomorrow and they don't.
I'd be all in favor of that. I've said before, too, I would also say if a player gets suspended, you don't get to replace him in the lineup. You play a guy short for however long that is. And, you know, that because then, you know, not in the case of Tom Wilson, who is a good player, but for a lot of these guys, oh, you know, geez, you're suspending my fourth liner. Oh, no, and now I have to put a better guy in the lineup. Doesn't really penalize the team at all. I'd put that in there, too.
Along those lines, I remember when he put Brandon Carlo in the hospital. This was like fucking 6 weeks ago or something like that. He was like, look, I don't want to hurt any players. And also, like, it's 7 games is a lot to miss. 1 game is a lot to miss. I should, you know, I'm an important player into this team. I shouldn't be missing time, blah, blah, blah. And the league's like, we agree. We think you're great.
Yep.
So.
I just, to get back to Greg's point about, you know, spearing is different than hits to the head. Like, I get that. I don't love that that's the system, but it is the system. But we're not even talking about the act here. Like, there's no dispute what Tom Wilson did. We all saw. You know, the dispute is over what was he trying to do? Was he trying to slam Artemi Panarin's head off the ice, or was he just, you know, somebody jumped on his back and he turned around and threw him down, and that's, you know, that's what it gets into. And that, it sucks because none of us can read minds, and none of us should have to, but, you know, unlike with a hit to the head where, you know, the intent doesn't necessarily matter. You spear a guy, okay, we know what you were trying to do. This is one of those things. Yeah. But, and this is why, though, again, like, the fact that it's Tom Wilson should matter. Like, my one of my favorite hockey plays in history is the in the Olympics, the when the pass across the ice went between Mario's legs and Jerome Iginla scores. And a lot of people were like, that's the greatest thing I've ever seen. And then other people were like, did that maybe just, maybe he just didn't see the puck and the puck just went between his legs. Like that happens a lot. Lots of passes go past guys. And it was like, yeah, you know what? If that was anyone else, I would probably just say he didn't see it. But that was Mario Lemieux. So I'm going to think maybe he did do that on purpose. And same thing, Connor McDavid can like bat a puck out of the air and you go, was that just luck? Well, for most guys, it would be, but that's Connor McDavid. I think he did that on purpose. Same thing with Tom Wilson, man. Like, if I see 99% of players in the NHL do what he did on Monday, I might say, well, that got a little out of hand. But when it's Tom Wilson, a guy who we know has no issue with hurting guys, a guy who was pissed off earlier in the period and making a big show of stomping around because he didn't like a penalty, a guy who goes to the penalty box and starts flexing like, he, you know, some, like a, just looking just completely ridiculous. Dickhead.
Yeah,
I don't have a problem saying, you know what, I can't read your mind, but I'm going to say balance of probability, I think you were trying to hurt the guy. So yeah, you're going to
I mean, the flexing part, the flexing part is kind of a tell.
Yeah, and again, this goes back to the thing of why do people get mad when it's Tom Wilson, when he does stuff that it would be fine if other guys did it? It's because he's a fucking dickhead.
And that, it,
yeah, because he's a
and that's why Chris, if Chris Kreider does this next year, no, it's not a suspension. Because
Chris Kreider's never done this shit before.
Yeah,
Tom Wilson
Chris Kreider hasn't given us years. You know, he's well. Yeah, we,
yeah. Okay, maybe
I don't
want to
get the Habs fans mad at me, but
right. Yeah,
he hasn't given us years and years right. of evidence that shows that he's
how many
perfectly
times has Chris Kreider been suspended? Right. That's all.
No, that's fair. But to your point about, I don't necessarily think a play should be elevated to another level based on who the participant is, based on their like. Reputation, but I do think that there's room in this debate for should a play be treated differently when the player is 6'4", 225.
Yeah, that's the other thing, man. Like, again,
built like a brick shit house.
Two other things I want to say, and then I'm done talking about this. We've spent too much time on it. One is, yeah, he has what, like probably 6 inches and 75 pounds on Artemi Panarin.
Panarin is like less than 160 pounds and he's like he's listed at like 5'11" and
right.
And you're yeah, absolutely.
So there's that. And also there's the thing of when this all started and all these Capitals fans were like, well, nobody clear, like, oh, I guess it's okay that Buchnevich kicked Vanacek or whatever. And I'm watching that because like, I think kicking is like the worst thing you can do in hockey. You have little fucking knives on your feet, right? So, like, if you're kicking somebody, well, you know what? Like, you're going to get punched in the head, and I think that's probably not totally outside the realm of a reasonable reaction on the part of a guy who's on the ice. But again, first of all, I watched that video like it was the fucking Zapruder tape, and I didn't see a kick anywhere in there. But B, like, again, like, it's the shit of... You know, Tom Wilson is looking for a reason to go ape shit on somebody, right? And yeah. And the thing,
especially in that game, like
yeah,
he was
right. Well, I was just
in the
say,
red already.
He was clearly
right.
Yeah,
everybody was
someone,
like he was fucking heated already, and so like he was looking for any excuse to fucking nail somebody. And between that and the second time that he threw Panarin to the ice, it's like, yeah, okay, no, he just wanted to hurt somebody. Like that's what crossed the line for me.
That's fair. The Zapruder film thing is there was a lot of that going on. I mean, I personally thought that Buchnevich's leg just kicked out when he fell to the ice.
Yeah, because he got punched in the fucking head. What the fuck?
Yeah, but I also don't think that this like. Hair pull gate that was conjured up by Rangers fans was a thing that
actually
happened.
Well, let me put it this way. Was it his hair or was it just like he horse collared him? I think he horse collared him.
He gave him like a rock bottom.
Yeah, yeah, it was a Uranagi because he didn't go down with him, but sure.
But I mean, like, that's to Sean's point. Like, when you slow it down and all of a sudden, like, there's a clip that somebody filmed off their laptop with their phone vertically and it slowed down to like 0.3. And now we're having an entirely different debate than what the play actually was. It doesn't help the discourse. In my conversations with player safety people, the Tom Wilson doesn't know his own strength aspect of this is an important one.
No, it isn't.
No, it is. It is in the sense that because you're going to agree with me, he needs to be responsible for it. Like he's not responsible for throwing a hit that might be pedestrian.
Doesn't take that into account. However, they're just like, ah, it's actually fine.
Tom also should go have a conversation with Zdeno Chara, because Zdeno Chara is twice his size, and yet
right.
we all remember him ragdolling Brian McCabe one time 15 years ago because he doesn't do it every few games, even though he easily could. So Zdeno Chara apparently figured it, like woke up one day and went, oh, I'm big and strong. I should probably factor that in to how I play. I've got no patience for... You know, Tom Wilson, we're always pumping his tires because he's this old school power forward. And, you know, it's when he's driving to the net, we all want to sing his praises because he's this big, strong guy. But suddenly when he does something, it's like, oh, how could he have known?
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Right.
He knows any hockey player, especially anyone who's a bigger guy, you know what it's like to be up against someone smaller than you. Even if, again, you want to give him the benefit of the doubt, which we shouldn't do because it's Tom Wilson, but you want to give him the benefit of the doubt that Panarin jumps on his back and at first he doesn't know who it is and he just, you know, reacts. You're telling me at some point he doesn't go, oh, wow, this guy that I'm throwing around doesn't seem to be 220 pounds big. Like I am.
It's really easy to throw this guy onto the ice
once. Yeah, that's weird.
And then I did it again. It was even easier. Crazy.
Sean, the last thing I wanted to ask you is there has been an uptick in the last 24 to 36 to 48 hours of old enforcers saying that if only there were enforcers, this would never happen. What's your take on that?
Well, I mean, I think completely on its own, there might be some truth to that. Tom Wilson, if this was the enforcer era and there were still like, you know, Colton Orr or whoever out there might behave a little bit differently, or at least the reaction from the team would be different. That's still doesn't, I mean, enforcers aren't coming back. So I don't really get what the point of that sort of argument is. And I got to say it's on the one hand, I like hearing from these guys because, you know, it's, we all hate the, well, you never played the game thing, but I think these guys who have played the game, been in that situation, do have some insight to offer. But I got to say, there are times where you hear some of this stuff and you're just like, really? Like John Scott's going to give us a lecture on not ragdolling guys who aren't fighters. The same John Scott who went out and attacked Phil Kessel in a preseason game, like intentionally premeditated, not because he got jumped first, but because he was just mad about something and wanted to hurt someone. That guy is going to give us a lecture. And by the way, he didn't get suspended for that. So for John Scott to act like, what? You can ragdoll guys and not get suspended? Dude, we saw you do it a few years ago. You're not surprised by this. So I like John Scott a lot, but at least personality-wise. But I found that pretty interesting that he seemed so surprised by something he himself had done not all that long ago.
So All-Star MVP John Scott to you, Sean.
Oh, right. Yeah, I think I heard something about that.
All right. Well, we all got it out of our systems. I think we're all better for it.
I really just hope tonight is not a gong show.
Yeah, it doesn't make this entire podcast immaterial. That'd be pretty
it
good.
Could. I mean, this is – and I'm not somebody who thinks the league wants this. I'm not, you know, some people are like, well, you know, the league loves this. They're going to get great ratings. No, they don't. They don't want it to be dumb. And I don't think it's going to be dumb, partly because the Rangers just aren't a team that's made that way. But who knows? This is the door that the NHL has chosen to leave open. So we'll see.
It is a game on national television. I don't know if I'll be watching it. I may just like meditate for a while, put in some earbuds, listen to Enya. Speaking of putting in some earbuds and listening to Enya.
No.
Yeah, that's it. That's a hard no.
Today's episode of PuckSoup is sponsored by Raycon. I'm exhausted, all right? Whether you're going on a jog or listening to Enya, a pair of Raycon wireless earbuds in your ears can make all the difference. You get crisp, powerful beats at half the price of other premium audio brands. They look great and they feel even better. Again, one of those products on PuckSoup that we vouch for in a big, big way. I was just running through Brooklyn Heights yesterday, checking out the sights, listening to the Rewatchables podcast on Lethal Weapon. Not Lethal Weapon 2, the one everybody likes like to watch, the first Lethal Weapon. And really enjoying life. They're great for working out, but they're also great for just popping them in, sitting on the couch or popping them in and listening to something while you're cooking, which is also something I like to do. Raycons are built to go wherever you want to go, and they're quick, and they have a seamless Bluetooth pairing and a compact charging case, very, very tiny. Great battery life as well. And listen up. Raycon's offering 15% off all of their products. So go to buyraycon.com/puck. That's buyraycon.com/puck. It's there. You will get 15% off of your entire Raycon order. And that is such a good deal. You'll want to grab a pair and a spare. That's 15% off at buyraycon.com/puck. That's buyraycon.com/puck. Connor McDavid is chasing 100 points in a 56-game season. I say he does it.
Oh, yeah, he's going to do it.
Yeah, I started writing about this a couple weeks ago, and it was like, oh, you know, if he gets really on a heater, and then a week ago it was like, he's actually on pace. And now it's just like, a week ago I was like, you know, I hope the Oilers don't sit him to rest him, and that's what caused him. At this point, it feels like they could give him a couple games off, and he's still going to get there.
Yeah.
Which is awesome.
I think I looked it up, and he's up to I looked it up before last night's game, so you know he had two assists, and but I think he has like 29 points in his last 12 games or some shit like that, like just ridiculous.
I don't know. You guys, let me know. Maybe your percent. Maybe this is like my Leaf fan goggles or coloring things here, but like I feel like people are sleeping on the Oilers a bit as a team that could do damage in the playoffs. Like I know they're super flawed, but they're getting good goaltending, and Connor McDavid has just gone to, I mean, he's past beast mode. I don't know what the next god mode, I don't know what the next level is. How do you beat these guys when they're like, it's like they start with a 2-0 lead every night because you know Connor McDavid is gonna do two ridiculous things.
I will say that, you know, look, it's not like these games don't count or whatever, but, you know, it's all against the Vancouver Canucks, who have been pummeled by the circumstances of this entire season. Like, everything's going real bad for them. Basically, from, what, 2 weeks into the season, things started going real fucking sideways for them. So, like, yeah. I don't know. I don't know that. Like, I'm putting a lot of stock into, well, Connor McDavid's just going to go out there and score a goal and set up two more every single night. Like, he's playing an AHL team pretty much at this point, right? So, I'm not, that's not me trying to diminish what he's doing. I think it's so fucking cool. But with that having been said, like,
well,
I don't know. Like, I think
still
the Oilers
might play
are still
the Jets
the
in the playoffs, which isn't going
so
that big a step up. Man.
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing I was going to say, though, is between the Leafs and the Oilers, seems like that's just like guaranteed to happen in the second round, the way both the other two teams in the top of the North are going, right? Like,
which will be awesome. Absolutely awesome.
Yeah,
provided the Leafs get past the first round, of course.
The Leafs, I mean, they would have to.
I really feel like a playoff series against the Leafs is going to be the thing that gets this McDavid kid some attention. I could see him
finally.
I could see him getting some Hart Trophy love next year if this goes well. For him.
But Ryan, your point's taken, which is that, and this is going to be a big deal in the awards voting too. Because of this being a monolithic scheduling season of the intra-division schedules and everything like that, like, the Oilers are currently ninth in the NHL in goals against average, right? The team in front of them is the Leafs at eighth. 7-1, Connor McDavid has not played this season. The other teams in the North Division, the Jets are 14th, Montreal 16th, Calgary 17th, Vancouver 25th, and Ottawa 28th. in goals against. So, like, it's a hell of an accomplishment, but I do wonder how he processed it, given that he never played, you know, Vegas or the Islanders or the Bruins
well,
at any point this season.
Let's flip that around then. Maybe part of the fact that those seven teams, the top seven teams all had the advantage of not having to play Connor McDavid. And I'm not trying to be a wise ass. Like, you, this is the NHL.
No,
you
had
five goals to any team's total, and they move several slots a lot of times. So, I think the fact that you didn't have to play Connor McDavid or Austin Matthews all season long maybe helps nudge you a little bit up that list.
Yeah,
I like this because it's a very Rorschach. You're not in here locked. I'm not locked in here with you. You're locked in here with me. Kind of approach
exactly.
to hockey.
Yeah, and the other thing, like somebody made the point to me when I said like, he's gonna make it fuck comfortably when he had the 4-point night the other night. Was he's like, if this was a full 82 game schedule against only the Canadian teams, McDavid probably blows past 200 points, right? Like if he gets an extra, like 10 games against the Canucks and the Jets and the Senators. I don't know, man. I think it would be really something. But yeah, it really does make it impossible to judge.
It's crazy. Like I'm watching, I'm watching the Leafs and what Austin Matthews is doing is amazing as well.
And
but
who
I watch
cares,
Austin Matthews.
Right?
Like, I watch him score every night, and I'm like, "Wow, that's a really great goal." You know, here's what they needed to do to stop that. You know, if this guy had been up on him a little quicker, if they had done this or that, I watch Connor McDavid, and I'm just like, "I got nothing, man. I got no idea." You could have had two extra guys
against,
out there.
There was a goal he scored against the Flames the other night where he just like absolutely cooks Chris Tanev. And as he's turning away after the puck goes in the net, Tanev just kind of puts his hands up like, what was I supposed to fucking do?
Yeah. That's great. I mean, it is kind of amazing that like Mario's 2000-2001 season is upheld as like one of the greatest stretches of offensive hockey that we've had in like the last 30 years.
And it's true.
And you have McDavid that's going to top him in points per game and Matthews that's likely going to top him in goals per game. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing to say is back then there were like multiple expansion or recent expansion teams in the league and blah, blah, blah. So like you can put caveats on all of this stuff, right? Yeah. But like
– but also Mario was like 37
right.
and just got off the couch and was like, all right.
Yeah, I understand. But what I'm saying is like anything you want to put on any – again, this season, and I wrote about it this week vis-a-vis the Stars, this season is fake. And like anything that happens, if people go, that doesn't work for me, I go, of course not. It's fucking ridiculous to say that like this season should count for anything. I mean, the Stars, like they just ran out of gas, right? Like that's what it looks like here.
Yeah.
But also, like they had, I think, 19 or 20 overtime games. So like they just did the Tortorella thing where they got to overtime a bunch and were like, see, that means we're good. And it's like, well, I mean, you won like 21 games out of 50, so not that good.
One of the biggest differences between the Mario year and this year, power play percentage in the Mario year, 16.6. Power play percentage now, 20.1.
Well, the other thing is like they called way more penalties back then.
I'm
pretty sure.
Let's see here.
They did.
That was
right.
Back in the clutch
four,
and grab
4 point,
era.
4.6 power play opportunities per game versus 2.9.
Yeah.
That's
so
wild.
That's a lot.
Is that what we're down to this year?
Wow.
Yeah.
I guess all the players just got a lot cleaner.
That's right.
Crazy.
Yeah. And actually, the bad news for this year, and hopefully things turn around, is even though our sample size is going to be smaller, we're at 2.93 goals per game for teams. Down from 3.02 last season. So,
oh, really?
Offense
that's
is not,
crazy. I was told that offense was way up again. That's interesting.
Well, maybe things go back to normal when we get back to 82 games, but it's definitely down this year in a frustrating way. NHL awards. Did the old NHL awards watch this week? Connor's going to win by a mile. I saw LeBron did his, I'm going to ask all the coaches about the Norris thing. They all said Hedman.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Not paying
attention. I have
not,
a feeling
not,
the
not
voters
all of
are going to.
But it was a real, it was more heavily weighted that you than you might think. Put it that way.
He's definitely a finalist, but I think and the voters I've spoken to, I think Fox wins. The other finalist is interesting, and I think it may end up being McCarr.
I mean, I get it. He's really good, but he also missed a ton of time. When Giordano didn't win because he missed the last quarter of the season, both like 2 years in a row, he missed a bunch of time.
No, you're right.
Right?
Yeah, but he started out great, and then he got hurt.
Yeah, and so like that's kind of it for me. But also like I think about the thing you said about what Dean Evason said last week, which was like I haven't watched that shit at all. Like, well, I got my own I got my own stuff going on, and that really is what it feels well. Like, oh, we all like Victor Hedman. He's got to be the guy, right? And it's like, oh, he's actually not been very good this year at all,
right?
And you know, like Dom had that very funny but also true infographic. Like that's pure posting power right there. And like the little infographic of like, oh, here's Adam Fox destroying him in every single category except being Victor Hedman, right? And like he's getting the Drew Doughty. Like, well, look, come on, he's got to be in there. He's Drew Doughty. He's Shea Weber. You know, like
right.
So I think it's silly to put him even in the top three, but
yeah, it's gonna and happen. This is the thing, right? Where is it who's the best defenseman in the league, or is it which defenseman had the best season? Because I think even given how Victor Hedman's season has gone, if we're starting a new team and we got one season to play, we're picking Victor Hedman for that team before we're picking Adam Fox. But the award is for the best season by a defenseman.
Right.
So, you know, it, which means reputation shouldn't factor into it, but we know how that often goes.
Also wanted to mention the Calder. I think I saw a tweet from you, Lambert, that celebrating the end of the brief challenge to Kaprizov's throne.
Yeah, look, Robertson had a great year, but the guy we thought was going to win all along deserves to win, it turns out. So,
yeah. Like, do you think the other spot is going to go to a goalie, by the way? Like, I think it's going to probably be Shishkin, but Nedeljkovic has been great, too, for Carolina.
Yeah, and I think Nedeljkovic is a pretty good one, but I don't know. I guess the guy I would have third, you know, right now, and I guess there's not a lot of runway left, but is Pia Suter. He's had a really good year.
Interesting. So,
but
my Ty Smith guy really fell apart, I think.
Yeah.
At some point this season.
Well, yeah, and all the Kevin Lankinen voters who were so convinced this was going to last forever.
You know, for a while, he was tremendous.
Yeah, and then
2 months.
A guy that nobody had ever heard of before. It turns out he's not like, okay, let's give Michael Hauser a run out next season and see how that fucking works out for him, right? Like, there's a reason we hadn't heard about Kevin Lankinen before, and it's because he's only okay. And that's fine to be.
It's fine to be okay. That's about it. Barkov's going to probably win the Selke.
Shouldn't. You seen the number? He's really dropped off lately. I was just looking at this yesterday.
I do wonder if that'll be out there enough when the voting happens to affect it. I just feel like he's sort of the – because I also think he's going to get some of that Ryan O'Reilly, the Selke is an MVP for defensive guys kind of thing.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, I say this all the time, but the Selke is just like, we know like 8 guys are good defensively, and so we're just going to cycle through them for the top 5
right.
every year. And like the wheel
right.
happened to land on Barkov this season because he got off to a good start. And so everybody
and none
was
of them
like,
are
well,
wingers.
There you go.
Right. None of them are wingers.
Yeah,
where there's like six or eight centers that we all know that are pretty good.
Yeah, and then Mark Stone.
Right,
that's right.
Yeah. He gets all the winger support.
It should be Joel Eriksson this year, but okay. Yeah.
Oh, spicy. Finally, before we get into some pop culture stuff, playoff races. Looks like we are definitely getting an all Florida series. That's really fun.
Yeah, it rocks.
It's pretty close to locked in. That's going to be excellent. And,
yeah,
and you know what? And Carolina Nashville is going to be a good series too. That's just as a match. It's kind of like a fun, weird, not really geographic matchup, but it's kind of got that whole let's let that one go 7 and really tick off all the old timers. That'd be fun.
Now we all agree that the Wild are fun.
Yes.
Man, are they fun and good enough to... Yeah, I know. I still can't... My mouth can't even make the words.
Yeah.
Are we worried that they're so much fun they're gonna ruin our Golden Knights Avalanche?
Yeah. We should be concerned
Godzilla
about
matchup?
That.
Yeah, there's
a decent chance.
Yeah, they seem to really have Vegas' number, so... I don't know.
Hmm. All right. Rolling Stone and intrepid TV reporter Alan Sepinwall and his crew put together a list of the top 100 greatest sitcoms. I'm going to give you the top 15 real quick. Ready?
Yeah. Well, let's guess, because I didn't look at this. Let's
okay.
guess.
Oh, okay. I have seen it, but...
Okay. Well...
You want to get Ryan? You
wanna, I don't
you
want to be the only
no,
one.
No, 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 Ryan. This is good. You want to give me four, and I'll tell you if they made the top 15.
The Simpsons, Cheers, Mary Tyler Moore, and MASH.
Simpsons 1,
sure.
Cheers 2,
okay.
MASH 6,
okay.
Mary Tyler Moore 7.
Wow. Yeah.
The top 10 was pretty.
Yeah, that seems
pretty
really
down the
in.
Middle. It yeah. was. It was. They a lot of times on lists like this, they'll. You can always tell the pick that got intentionally moved too high or too low just to get people talking, and I don't really see that here. Maybe like they had the like Parks and Recreation in like the top 10. I could see.
Yeah, I'm assuming that this list had a lot of the modern.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. And here's like, the thing. Here's the thing one of the things I didn't like about the list, not a lot of 80s sitcoms, which to me is kind of the golden era for at least the platonic ideal of a sitcom. And mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying that everyone from that era was a good it was necessarily a good show, but I was surprised. Like, I don't think, correct me if I'm wrong, Greg, I don't have the whole list in front of me, but like, I don't think Family Ties was on the list. Like,
I don't know.
No Growing Pains, no Facts of Life. Like, it's weird that there wasn't a lot on there that, from what I would argue is like I say,
the golden age.
Kinda, yeah, the golden age. So, that seemed, but also, they kind of expanded the definition of sitcom so much that they're like putting in like stuff from Adult Swim and, you know, every like hipster cartoony thing.
Oh, so, Horseman. They're talking about like just funny TV shows and not necessarily.
Well, that's
sitcoms.
The thing. Like I wouldn't count The Simpsons as a sitcom. Cause just, I don't think I get the argument for it. Just to me, an animated show is not that, like a sitcom is actual people doing comedy with
three
everything
cameras,
that's involved
people
in
on
that.
A set at a audience.
I don't mind, you know, I'm not saying you have to have a live audience. I'm not saying you can't do the one camera, but like, to me, there is a very big leap between actual people selling jokes versus voice actors and animation. And if you took animation out, that you'd take out like 10 or 12 off the list, which would clear room for maybe some of the more traditional ones. Cause I don't think like, you know, I don't need Rick and Morty on my list of the best sitcoms. At some point, I feel like you're kind of...
I do think The Simpsons is closer to a sitcom than, say, South Park, which was 22. You know?
It has everything in a traditional sitcom. It showed up in the late 80s. Yeah. It showed up in the late 80s. It's even got like all those, a lot of the same beats of the... It's just the fact that it's animated to me... Mm-hmm. On my own definition, I wouldn't consider it.
Well, especially early on, they definitely tried to keep it very, like, kind of buttoned down, you know?
Can you do your old Homer Simpson voice? It's one of my favorite impressions that you do.
Frosty chocolate milkshakes, boy. Like, that's everybody's old, come on, boy, we're going bowling. You know, when he's just doing Walter Matthau and not even a good Walter Matthau, yeah. I mean,
that was pretty bang on. I never
put it together that was Walter Matthau. Holy
shit.
Oh,
that everybody, yeah, everybody. I thought that was just like a thing everybody knew.
No, I never realized
that.
Yeah. I'm scrolling down the list. There's a lot of animated. There's a lot of animated stuff on this.
I'm not surprised. I mean, like,
which is, and then the other weird thing about it, and this is a lot of lists do this, and it's kind of Rolling Stone does it sometimes with their music, but it's like 90% American. but then they pick like a couple. A couple like
Fleabag's 21st.
Yeah, or they're Blackadder, and you're like, well, Blackadder's either not on the list or it's higher than 70th or whatever. Like, you gotta pick. It's just weird.
Is Mr. Bean on there?
No, it's not.
By virtue of having
eight episodes or whatever. So
yeah, and just the one where he puts the turkey on his head should make it number one,
dude. The Christmas episode again.
He's driving the car from the top. It's when he orders the steak tartare and doesn't realize what.
I need to watch fucking Mr. Bean. That's the remedy.
The reveal of the gift to the girlfriend at the end of the Christmas episode is legit. It's a classic comedy moment. That is one of the funniest thing I've ever seen.
Goddamn, Mr. Bean was really funny.
Yeah,
I feel like the kind of not good Mr. Bean movie sort of like detracted from how good the series was.
Yeah.
Also, the fact that people say I look like Rowan Atkinson detracts from the series for me.
That would probably
Lambert, to answer your question, the hot shotting on this list was the inclusion of both Louis and The Cosby Show, which is a bold move in 2021.
Well, I mean, look,
and then they spend most of the write up for both of them talking about how
both of them were like
on the list.
Yeah, both of them were just like so incredibly influential and like huge. Louis for obviously just like more the entertainment industry where everybody wanted the Louis deal was a huge thing, and then obviously like The Cosby Show was the biggest show on TV for fucking like 8 years. It was like a monster fucking hit, and to leave it off, I think I don't like I said I don't know.
I mean, it's again like I think they had it like 16th or something. It which feels
that
weird to me. Like to me, it's either
right, I guess.
Oh, I to yeah, me, it's either higher or it's not on the list.
Like I think you do have to consider, you know, Bill Cosby's place in comedy and all that kind
comedy,
of stuff. Like it does. Like you can't listen to the chocolate cake bit anymore or whatever. Like I get all that, but like at the time, chocolate cake bit was the funniest thing anybody had ever heard in fucking 1978 or whatever. So. Like I get that both ways, especially like and from you know the whole like separate the art from the artist thing. Like I don't know. So, I'm sure if you go back to like the early shows on those lists, like a lot of those people were probably bad people. That's just like what the deal was back then. Yeah. So I don't know. Like I don't
was
know
really
anything
bad,
about.
Though.
Oh yeah,
he was
no,
super
I,
bad.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Of course, nobody's saying he isn't. With that having been said, if you left off The Cosby Show or I think there's more of an argument for Louis, but if you left off The Cosby Show, you'd just be like, well, come on. I mean,
Louis's tough because, like you said, it served as the template for an entire slate of shows. I mean, like, You're the Worst and, like, all these other shows that are kind of in that same genre. It was the thing that kind of, like, sparked that like sitcom renaissance of a certain ilk. But anyways, let me give you the top 20 real quick. BoJack Horseman, Roseanne, which I was thrilled to see on this list. I think it's a gold standard sitcom.
Yep.
Incredibly great sitcom.
Speaking of separating the art from the artist, they literally
They did that. Yeah. 30 Rock, Taxi, The Cosby Show at 16, Arrested Development, The Andy Griffith Show, sure. I mean, that's like, you know,
yeah, again,
legacy.
Just kind of a template for a lot of other shit, sure.
Frasier at 13, Curb at 12, Dick Van Dyke at 11, Larry Sanders at 10.
Larry Sanders.
Parks and Rec
so
at 9.
Funny.
There's
and
literally
also the fact that they – that's a great show, but the fact that they also had the Gary Shandling Show on the list, that was – that was one of those, as I was reading the list, I'm like, it probably won't be on there, but it should be, and I was very happy to see that in there.
I can't in any good faith argue that Parks and Rec should be above Larry Sanders, but they have it at
yeah,
nine.
That's outrageous. And especially,
Honeymooners,
like, that's a show that really, like, I don't think has aged very well.
Well, the problem is I was never in the cult because their first season was so bad.
I
didn't watch it in its original run. I caught reruns with Ruby because she was a big fan.
I watched every episode and I liked it at the time, but I just think like, you know,
because the government.
Yeah, well, like not just the government, but it's just like, oh yeah, like all the girl boss shit. You know what I mean? Like,
Right.
That just kind of aged like fucking milk out of the refrigerator for me.
But you know what? They had to have something. It's the only show that's high on the list from like the 2000s, other than The Simpsons. But you know, The Simpsons, I think it's...
Where's The Office?
It's a heavy listing.
Well, that's... The Office is like 20... Hang on. I just saw it. It's 23rd, but...
Which office?
See, this is really funny. This is really funny because...
Which office?
Yeah, it was the British office
US,
on the list?
The U.S. office is 23rd. I'm not quite sure where the other office is, but look...
I don't even know if it's on there.
If the argument is that the U.S. office was the law of diminishing returns, right? Because, like, after Carell left, the show was really not good. I mean, that should, in theory, impact The Simpsons, shouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. But yeah. Okay. I think, but let me put it this way though. I think even leaving aside the whatever 25 bad years they've done, it's more like 22, I guess, but you know, like even leaving aside the really bad seasons of The Simpsons that like a lot of people like, you know, I'm certainly not alone in thinking everything after season 10 isn't very good, but you know, the impact it had on the comedy world, I think, massively outstrips the whatever the like cultural cachet The Office has. The Office is just like, oh, here's a gif of Stanley rolling his eyes, whereas The Simpsons is like, oh, like 90% of the TV shows that or comedies that came out after it are in some way influenced by The Simpsons.
Yep. And by the way, UK Office was on though; it was 30th. US was 23rd. I checked it, and so I was
speaking of The Simpsons. If you haven't read it, everybody should read the interview with John Swartzwelder.
Oh my god,
was in the New Yorker. It's so fucking good.
Yeah,
it's not only for the show, but also like the craft of writing and everything else.
Yep.
Real quick, the Honeymooners are 8th. I have a very special place.
Not high enough.
Yeah, because it was always the WPIX Channel 11 in New York always used to run the Honeymooners. They still do, I think, in marathons. My dad, maybe his favorite sitcom, and I mean, obviously there are things that don't age well, like making an entire catchphrase out of punching your wife, for example. But there are a lot of things that do, and I do appreciate it.
I got to say, this list, the top 8 is like there's a big leap from the top 8 to down to like Parks and Rec at 9, because I know, like Ryan said, not high enough. Tell me which of the 7 that are going to come next.
Okay,
you bump down, because it's a really good list.
Mary Tyler Moore is 7. MASH is 6. All in the Family is 5.
Yeah. Wait, what did you say was 5? Sorry.
All in the Family.
Good show.
Real good show.
I Love Lucy 4.
Totally get it.
Seinfeld 3.
Yep, of course.
Then Cheers, then The Simpsons. And I said this when the list came out, like, what is going to – how many generations of TV watchers will we have to go through, and how many new shows, and how much sort of like attrition will have to happen for that top 3 to ever change? Like to ever change.
I think it's impossible at this point, right?
You know, it is and it isn't. Comedy is a weird thing. Sometimes things become so influential that – everything else builds on it so much that eventually the original doesn't seem as funny anymore. It doesn't hold up as well. Like, have you ever heard like a Henny Youngman stand-up routine and you're listening to it going, this is the most cliched stuff. And it's like, yeah, but it's not cliched. He's the first guy to ever do this.
Yes, of course.
And everybody else copies him. But it's like, you know, then you listen to it or you listen to Richard Pryor and you're like, I like Chappelle and the Chris Rock stuff better. And it's like, yeah, because.
Right.
Well, this, like, and I could see that maybe happening with like, that Seinfeld Cheers era where but it hasn't yet.
I'll give you now. Two that I think are really low. Veeps at 44 and Friends is where the hell I just saw it. Friends
like
is
in
at
the
38.
30s, right?
Yeah. That's appropriately. Yeah, I think rated. That's as like, you know, as much as like, again, it has a lot of cultural cachet and stuff. It's like, yeah, we've all seen like 50 different versions of Friends. Like, and believe me, like Friends obviously hit. I've seen every episode multiple times, blah, blah, blah. But like, you know, I don't think when I go, oh, what are the greatest sitcoms of all times? Like Friends does not enter my mind. Like it's good.
Ooh. But, it's good. I think it's top 30.
And you said it was like 37? 35?
Yeah, it's 38th.
Okay, yeah, okay. So you want to say it gets bumped up 8? Fine, who cares? You know. But, yeah, I don't know.
Thank you. I'll throw out a couple that I thought should have been higher. I don't remember exactly where it was, but WKRP was like pretty – it was on the list but pretty far down.
That is a
personal favorite.
That's such an old guy opinion though. Oh, yeah, remember the turkey they threw it? Oh,
yeah.
Unbelievable.
But again, that's another one where it's like that – a lot of that shifted what came after it. And just as a personal favorite, and I was happy it did make the top 100, but it's way, way down. Night Court, I think, is underrated as a quality show. Like that was.
They're rebooting it, so we're gonna find out.
Are they?
I just ruined my day.
Are you serious?
I'm pretty sure they
somebody
are,
tweeted
yeah.
out like Oof. The top to top 20 shows from like I don't know, like 35 years ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that like 20 million people or some such would watch Night Court every week is kind of mind-blowing. Like I watched that show growing up and I found it to be such a weird, quirky, niche mm-hmm. show that it kind of blows my mind that was like a sitcom that people, like that sitcom
huge.
would definitely be on some, weird ass streaming service right
it was,
now. It would not
it was
be
both
on,
a
like,
different
NBC.
Time and also the fact that back then you could like put anything on. Like in between the Cosby Show and whatever or wherever,
and it would get like
tell Jonathan Silverman that. Freaking
yeah, tell Carolina in the City that.
That's true, and then some other ones that got left off again, like all of those '80s, like Family Ties and that. Somebody else pointed out no Mork and Mindy on the list.
Mm.
The third best Happy Days spinoff? Like
no Happy Days, I don't think was on the list. Either,
really? Wow.
Which is, and...
I mean, I never liked it, so I don't care.
And just because you know I'm going to say it, Married with Children should be in the top 100 of, just based on its peak, even acknowledging three-quarters of it.
But to bring it back to the thing about, what's the, what would ever knock those three out of the top three? I think the reason those are in the top three is they're so like genre redefining. Like Seinfeld, I think, was probably the first show about like really nasty people. You know what I mean? Like just people who are not nice people at all. And all of them are not nice. Like there had obviously been shows with like dirtbag characters or whatever, but nobody on the level of those four. Obviously, again, The Simpsons was just like. Yeah, nothing ever existed like that. And Cheers is really like, maybe not the invention, but the perfection of like the hang. You're just you and your homies hanging out, having a good time, busting balls. Like if you watch that Cheers pilot, like they just have everybody knocked episode one. Like nobody fundamentally.
It's crazy.
It's crazy. And so, I think that like that's why is – even if you want to say, obviously, The Simpsons ended up being very different from what it started as, which was just kind of like, what if a family about – or a sitcom about a working class family was animated instead of live? It just was like, oh, we've never seen something like this before on TV. And, and yeah, that's why, like – in much the same way as I think the Honeymooners should be hired, just because it's like, oh, if you watch an episode of the Honeymooners, you're like, that's a Friends joke. That's a all in the family joke. Like, it's just all this stuff that it totally set the table for 70 years of television. I think that that's why, like, The Simpsons and Seinfeld are just not getting displayed. And I'm not even like – like I'm just not even like that big of a Seinfeld fan. I can just like I think Curb is better personally for me, but like you don't have Curb without Seinfeld, obviously. So
right. All right, let's end with an overrated, underrated. A couple of
sitcoms
suggestions. Oh. Well, no, that was actually somebody said in honor of the Rolling Stone list, overrated, underrated sitcoms. But I feel like
we just did that.
We just did that. We've got. By the way, I think people are trying to trick us because someone did suggest Harrison Ford movies, but not Star Wars or Indiana Jones.
Ooh, that's,
now, that's
good
intriguing.
One. That's
okay.
A good
hold on. Let me think.
Reggie Smith says, in honor of May the Fourth be with you, Star Wars things that aren't the movies. J&M's dad says theme restaurants. Puck Patty, and I liked this one, but we don't have to do it. Jurassic Park characters from the first film. And then, what was the other one that I saw? Oh, for Cinco de Mayo, Mexican food or drinks.
We've definitely done Mexican
food. Done that. They are.
Okay.
People will be pissed. I like the Star Wars one. Well, obviously.
Yeah, let's just do that. Yeah, that's fine.
Sean, things that aren't the movies. Could you confidently do a Star Wars
one? I'm going to work on it. You guys stall a little bit for me, and I'll see if I can think of four things.
Okay.
That aren't the movie.
So overrated Star Wars things that aren't the movie. Star Tours at Disney.
I think appropriately rated is fine, right? Like, oh my God, Star Tours. You got to go on Star Tours.
Too long a wait, and honestly, a little bit too much C-3PO for your boy.
Mm.
And obviously pales in comparison to the Star Wars ride that came after it, where in Star Tours you're in, I mean, what honestly looks like a Star Trek shuttlecraft, and in whatever the new one is, you're in the fucking Millennium Falcon. So let's go. Overrated, yeah. Star Tours.
I'm going to say 75% of all Star Wars video games. there are a lot of unbelievable Star Wars games, but it's because probably they've made 7,000. I think it's probably a conservative estimate. They just throw a lot of shit at the wall, and sometimes it really works, and then sometimes it's a dud. So I've played a ton of Star Wars video games. They are all over the map in terms of quality.
My overrated is going to be that the Weird Al song where he did American Pie, but it's about the first movie.
I was going to have that as least favorite. So
okay. I like Weird That's Al fine. As much as anyone, but that is like a 7-minute song, and there's no jokes in it at all. It's just him describing the plot
Are
of
you
a bad
saying
movie.
This it's here excruciating Anakin detail guy isn't a joke?
And making it kind of rhyme.
Oh, man. That's a great choice. That's a great choice. Underrated. Burger King drink glasses.
I don't know about
this. I have a collection of Star Wars Burger King drink glasses. It's art. It may not be the collectible for everybody, but I used to go all the time with my family it used to be a thing where, like, you'd go to Burger King and you'd spend an extra, like, $4 and you get a commemorative glass for, like, Return of the Jedi. And I have a bunch of them, and they're awesome. So that's my underrated.
I'm going to say Christopher Lee's performance as Count Dooku.
Now, this is from the movie!
Okay, we're saying, like, not anything at all to do with
not anything from any of the movies.
Okay. Well, Sean, come back to me, then. Sean, go ahead.
I don't know if this is really underrated, but it just Greg mentioning the theme park ride kind of put me on this, because way a few years ago when we were at whatever the theme park with the Star Wars stuff down in Florida, we went on a couple of the rides. They were fine. We weren't lining up for hours to go on anything, but just the real life interaction stuff. If I had been a kid, I would have just absolutely loved that. Like, when you're just walking down, like, you know, walking down the street and suddenly there's like a stormtrooper parade coming towards you and you're like, oh, and or I got to watch like my little 4-year-old nephew like get Jedi training. Like, the Jedi training thing is awesome.
Jedi training is awesome.
It is fantastic. For, you know, for the kids, like for that age where they get to, they learn how to be a Jedi, and then Darth Vader shows up and they get to fight Darth Vader. It's fantastic. Like, I would have just completely marked out for that when I was like 8 years old, and it was still it was pretty cool to see people get to do that and have that experience. So I think if you're going to go to something like that, I apparently lining up for 3 hours to go on a ride isn't worth it, but just hang around and watch all the basic stuff that happens, or like, you know, just like there's like a stormtrooper walking around and he's just like talking crap to people, telling them to get out of the way and stuff. It's just really well done.
Yeah, I was just about to say the immersive experience of Galaxy's Edge, where you feel like, or Edge of Galaxy, I think it's called.
Galaxy's Edge,
where you get to feel like, damn, this really is freaking Star Wars around here, huh? You got the little milk.
Love it.
The Coke comes in a little fun bottle. It's really fun, and I had a really good time. With that having been said, I hope all those kids realize they're not real Jedi, and that's not canon.
I don't know.
It's not canon, and so... but my underrated will be the idea of lightsabers. I don't think people think about how fucking cool they are enough. They rock. They are awesome. They're swords that are lasers.
And know exactly where to end too, which is you know, like I've seen real genius. I know lasers just go on and on and on.
See, I haven't seen that because I'm not.
I mean, that's why they're not laser sabers, right?
Luke Skywalker called it
a laser sword, and he does. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Favorite. The 1970s disco remix of the Cantina song with the laser beams, the laser blasts in it, is so goddamn fun.
God damn it! Greg, I was going to say the musical genre that we all know and love called jizz. That's
yeah. I know I can't extend it to all the music from the movies, so I'll go with this offshoot of specifically. The disco remix of the cantina of it's like a Star Wars suite, right? Because it has the main theme in it, and then it also has the cantina theme in it. It's so epic, and I wish I could have been coked out of my mind at Studio 54 dancing to that song in 1978.
Yeah, I'm gonna say my favorite thing about Star Wars is George Lucas just being like, I'm going to do whatever I want and nobody can say anything about it. And he made fucking so much bullshit that stinks, but is like, that's what being an auteur is, man. Like, he got fuck you money because he came up with something that was so good. And like, I love that. I think that's so cool. Like, I don't have to like all the fucking prequels and all this kind of stuff to still say George Lucas is a genius, and he rocks, and I can't wait to see what he does next.
And it's great because, like, it even started back in the first movie, right? Because they're like, George, your movie is an enormous budget. We can't really pay you. He's like, oh, okay, how about you just give me the rights to all the action figures and marketing things? They're like, fine, this will never make any money.
He sold all the Star Wars shit to Disney for $4 billion and then was like, I don't need this. I'm giving this away. That rules. That's so fucking cool.
It's so cool. All right.
My favorite, if kid me was definitely the toys. I had all the action figures and everything. I was big into that and that was super fun. Grown up me, I'll go with what is maybe an obvious pick, Mandalorian. I just think that's a really good
show.
Yeah, watching Mandalorian was the best like Star Wars experience that I've had since I was a little kid. It better than any of the movies that followed it. It was just a really good show.
Least favorite for me is, and this is going to be very specific, but let me see if you remember this. It's the sneak preview battle droid figure from the Phantom Menace. It was a battle droid riding a like floating turret. It was the first toy released by Kenner for the prequels. I may have in my dad's closet 20 of these in boxes, anticipating that one day it would pay for my kids' college. And you can get them now on eBay for like $18.
I will trade you my entire baseball card collection for one of them. They're probably same value.
My least favorite thing about Star Wars is that Disney owns it now. And it's only going to get worse from here. Like, yep, The Mandalorian's great. The fucking theme park thing is great. But boy, those three movies stink. You know what? I got to say, I've never explored the animated shows, so maybe those are all good, and like the Bad Batch is unbelievable or whatever. But like, I just kind of don't trust it. I feel like they caught lightning in a bottle with the Mandalorian because they turned it over to two guys who were like huge Star Wars nerds, and then they fucking focus grouped the rest of it. And I don't trust them now.
It is so amazing to me. Like, if you had gone back 5 years in the past or whenever they did that deal and been like, they're going to make the three sequels and a couple of other movies, and it's going to go so badly that they're going to be like, maybe we should stop making Star Wars movies.
Incredible.
Just do something stuff. Like, that would have been inconceivable.
What a huge fuck up. Yeah, every Star Wars movie of its – or Disney Star Wars movie of its, like, lane, so, like, the main three and then the two A Star Wars stories, made less money than the one that came out before it. Everybody lost their mind. Like, didn't The Force Awakens make, like, $1 billion? People lost their minds over it. And then the second one did fine, but people were mad at it. And then the third one sucked. And everybody agreed. It only made $500 million or whatever. But, you know, it's – they just mishandled it from the word go, basically. And, yeah, I mean, there are a million different reasons to it. We don't have to get into all of them. But, like, I just – like, they should make it so that people who actually like Star Wars are in charge of it. And much like George Lucas, you know – nobody, there's no focus groups. It's just like, this is straight from the tap, you know? And it seems like they really did that with a lot of The Mandalorian, which is why The Mandalorian works. So, like, just like, people go see this shit, and it doesn't have to all make $1 billion to be a hit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Make a smaller scale Star Wars movie like The Mandalorian, and people will watch it and love it. So, that's my whole thing on the Disney Star Wars, but yeah.
Oh, hey, I was just getting coffee. What were you guys talking about?
With that having been said, put me in a Star Wars movie. Great, thanks.
Did you have a least favorite, Sean? I forget.
Yeah, my least favorite is Star Wars fans.
Yep, that right. That's
not,
true.
Not all of them, but you know who I'm talking about.
We do.
Yeah, all the Raylo shippers, is that who you're talking about?
That's no, right. He's not That's talking exactly. Well, he might be.
I knew it.
It used to be that Star Wars fans were just annoying when they're like, actually, the Rancor would never fit inside that dungeon. And then things got weird. Rancor, by the way, was a candidate for a favorite because of the toy, which was fucking incredible back in the day, where you can make the mouth move and shit. Put little Luke Skywalker inside the mouth.
From what I understand, he's cool. From the movie, though. So,
well, he's a toy, though.
Yeah, that's true.
All right. That's an epic roller coaster of emotions of Puck Soup this week. You can find my stuff on ESPN.com. I just appeared on Sports Nation talking about the Tom Wilson stuff. If you want to track down that video. And you can listen to me and Ryan and Ruby on Mise en Pod, the podcast that covers food on TV, but
and we never
argue. Top Chef. And no, it's all a much different vibe and a pleasant vibe. It's basically just me and Ryan drooling over Padma's costume changes and Ruby going, you too. No, it's nothing like that.
No, it's not an it's accurate representation at all. Oh,
it's not an accurate representation.
What's a show about Top Chef I would never want to listen to? Greg, describe that real quick.
I just described it.
Yeah. EPRinkside.com. I wrote about, like I mentioned earlier, I wrote about the Stars this week and how just throw this whole season out. Who cares? It doesn't matter. They miss the playoffs. Great. Doesn't matter at all. It is immaterial. And if you go to EP Ringside and you want to sign up for an annual subscription, if you use the code I love EP, all one word, all capital letters, you get 3 free months on top of what you're signing up for. So check her out.
Find me on The Athletic. You know, the drill by now. We've got my piece that went up today is my annual attempt to find three nice positive things to say about all the bad teams in the league. So you can come and read that, and then you can go into the comments and watch me get yelled at by Devils fans for not being positive enough about what is apparently a super, super good team.
Yeah, they're unbelievable.
Yeah, they're good.
They're this close, Sean. You got to understand.
They're not. We need at least like 6 more Hugheses, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Sorry about all that. Bye.
Bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to what if you commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.